This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 9th day of October 2010 here in Japan. And this is a video interview, so for all of those who are watching on YouTube, please go to CorbettReport.com to download the MP3 audio of this conversation. And for those who are listening to the MP3, please go to YouTube to watch the video. And today I am honored to be joined on the line by Paul Verge, independent filmmaker and the man behind Divergent Films at DivergentFilms.com. He's made numerous documentaries, including Believers Beware and 2020 Hindsight Censorship on the Frontline, and also Hijacking Humanity, which listeners might know was episode 149 of the Corbett Report podcast. I'm sorry, episode 151 of the Corbett Report podcast released earlier this week. So, Paul Verge, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show, James.
Well, it is an honor to be speaking to you again, and I'm really excited about this because it's really the first time we've had a one-on-one conversation. So let's just start by talking a little bit about yourself and your background. Who is Paul Verge? Where did he come from? And why is he making documentary films?
Well, I'm just a normal average guy who went to school, graduated from high school. I'm Canadian, raised in Vancouver. And I, on a lamb, decided to go on a trip back in 2003 with a good friend of mine down to Dallas, Texas. And my brother had just given me this David Icke book, and I hadn't read any conspiracy stuff. I was just, all I knew politically was that I was against the war in Iraq because it just seemed wrong. So I totally believed the official story of 9/11, you know, didn't really have any political leanings except slightly left. And getting stopped at the border for having this David Icke book completely opened my eyes to the fact that this whole police state apparatus was very real and it was in my face. And so I read that David Icke book. It was called Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster. And that opened my eyes to a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, trying to disprove that book, I did a lot of research. And the more research I tried to find to debunk what I was reading, the more legitimate information I was finding, and you know, once you open that Pandora's box, it's hard to go back. So 2004, 2005, I went through a period of, I guess what you could call cognitive dissonance, whereby I was quite paranoid and afraid of this, you know, paradigm that I had uncovered, and I didn't have a lot of friends or people to talk to bounce these ideas off of. So I was, you know, stalking internet forums, reading a lot. You know, I found out Alex Jones and Jeff Rantz and all these other sites that had existed probably since the late 90s, and they were covering all this stuff. So it was a lot for my brain to take in, and I had many a sleepless night researching all this stuff until 2006. It was the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. I got up the nerve, thanks to my friend Heidi, to go to New York and go to Ground Zero for the fifth anniversary. And right around that time, like, I had seen the movie Loose Change, the second edition. I had really done a lot of research on the whole 9/11 event, so I decided I'm going to go there, you know, interview people, get to know all the members and leaders of the so-called conspiracy movement, because there's many different areas that people bring to the table. And with that footage that I got at Ground Zero and during the whole conference, you know, I met Dylan Avery, Luke Radowski, Jason Burmis and Corey Rowe. I met Alex Jones, all these people whose work I'd consumed previously. I decided to try and meet them. And they were all very outgoing, and the majority of them gave me time for interviews. And a lot of that footage I took, and within 2 months, I had managed to get funding for Hijacking Humanity. Now, regarding Hijacking Humanity as a film, it originally was meant to be a cross analysis of, like, not just the 9/11 stuff, but what I had learned about the Federal Reserve System, what I learned about propaganda, what I learned about just this whole system of social engineering. And I hadn't seen a film that had put all of those elements together, right, to show how they are intercorrelated, I guess you could say. And it wasn't until I heard Richard Andrew Grove's podcast, Project Constellation, where I decided, like, wow, that's a very comprehensive overview of exactly what's going on in this whole situation, with 9/11 as kind of a keyhole through which you can see all these other events in their proper context. So he was actually the first guy that I contacted when trying to get actual interviews for Hijacking Humanity. and he was kind enough to let me stay at his and his fiance Lisa's apartment in Connecticut, and we did a really great set of interview footage there, and we drove out to Dylan Avery's in Oneonta, New York, and we did some interview footage there with the Loose Change guys, and that was like the core seeds of Hijacking Humanity's footage, right? We managed throughout the next year to get a lot of interview footage with a lot of different people, but because I was a nobody still, I hadn't done any films yet other than a small film called Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception. Nobody was really returning my phone calls or my emails because, you know, who's to say what my actual perspective is, right? So it was a difficult climb, but I just felt like somebody had to say something that put all these events and all this conspiracy information in context in an understandable way. So that's the long and short of
right. Well, that's interesting. I mean, that connects with my own story in a number of ways. Not only, obviously, also I was listening to 9/11 Synchronicity back when I was starting to get into this information, and that was one of those podcasts that really helped to expand out the research into a lot of other areas. And also, Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception was one of the first documentaries I remember watching online when I had my awakening. So hats off to you for being involved with that. And also in 2006, I was stopped for some special airport screening, and they were going through and asking me about the book that I was reading and taking my diary to make photocopies of it and things like that. So that was one of those in-your-face police state incidents that really shook me up quite a bit. I mean, I just wasn't expecting that. And although that wasn't exactly the trigger that got me into all of this, it certainly helped prepare me, I guess, for when I started hearing people talking about the police state and overt police state measures. It started to, I mean, there was something I could connect to personally. So in a way, there's almost a way in which the police state can backfire on the system that's trying to keep us oppressed.
Absolutely. I think, if anything, the more people that it victimizes, the more people it's actually inadvertently waking up. You can look at it as the system, the police state, kind of gets tighter. It becomes like a tighter noose closing around the population. People can't help but see this noose coming closer and closer, and it's touching a few people and affecting their lives negatively. Then, you know, it's one of those things where the more they try and impose this police state, the more they try and impose these mental prisons, they're actually catalyzing our wake up even faster. And it's just a matter of having other people there to kind of catch you or to be there when you wake up so that you're not, you know, completely disoriented and suffering from cognitive dissonance, as I've went through, and I'm sure several people listening to this have gone through. It's just a period where you feel alone and that no one can relate to the enormity of what you're discovering. And the beautiful thing is there's this growing movement, ever-growing movement, of people of all different, you know, walks of life and periods of consciousness, I guess you could say, where they get it, they get the big picture, maybe not the full thing, maybe they have a few blind spots they haven't seen through yet, but for the most part they get the common ideology, which is that there's this new world order of elites that are trying to control and subdue humanity, or have been doing it for quite a while, but they're trying to get it down to like a technocracy based on the ideas of sophism and Fabian socialism. And it's essentially supposed to be this invisible prison for your mind, right? I'm sure you've seen The Matrix. I've seen The Matrix. It's one of the best metaphors to explain exactly how the system works and even how it to get free, right? You have to learn your way past these agents that they'll dispatch. You have to outsmart and evolve your consciousness beyond the one that is causing all these problems.
Absolutely, you hit it right on the head there. I think what we are experiencing is a paradigm shift, and a paradigm is just sort of the dominant ideology in any given era, and people just understand things in a certain way. And I think we're coming to a new and different understanding. And certainly, I've seen it in my work, just the incredible explosion of people who are waking up to this and are aware of this, at least in one way or another, depending on how much they're involved in it. But I'm sure you've seen this as well in your work. So tell us a little bit about your development after Hijacking Humanity and moving into Believers Beware and 2020 Hindsight and some of the other things that you've worked on.
Yeah, well, once the kind of core of Hijacking Humanity started coming together, which is around January 2008, I had kind of a pre-screening of a two-hour version of the film. And that's, you know, Richard Grove and his fiance flew out. A couple other people who were in the film also flew out to Vancouver to attend that premiere. And we were really lucky. We sold out this theater at the, what was it called, the Planetarium. And we had a good reception, had a little after party, but we had these unknown people show up in black leather coats, and they kind of cornered Richard and started to ask him, you know, what do you need to move forward? And he's alluded to this offer of $3 million that was put our way, and that, you know, I can attest because I was there that actually happened. This guy, you know, said, if you guys stop talking about Freemasonry and these other elements of how we've dumbed down the population, then, you know, we can give you funding. We can get you an interview with Al Gore, you know, because he's a legendary truthsayer. And, you know, we indicated our disinterest, or Richard did to the guy. And that guy actually tracked me down a couple months later at another movie premiere I was at, and confronted me over our inaction towards him, you know, upset that we would dare say anything negative about these organized systems and secret societies and such. And it's like, you know, they can only triumph, they can only continue their game as long as we're ignorant of those things' existence and the machinations, the Hegelian dialectics they use to keep us ignorant and to profit off of it. So, you know, we're not prepared to accept any money with strings attached, any corporate donation, any controlling interest to come and affect our independent media. And I think that speaks for you, for me, for Richard, and the many people that we're affiliating with, right? There's a huge list now that's growing through tragedyandhope.com, but it's getting larger, you know, every week. We're getting more people that are joining, and a lot of these people are conscious, you know, consumers of this information, but a lot of them are actually saying, you know what, I've consumed enough for right now. I feel like giving back. I feel like sharing some of this knowledge and understanding that I've accrued, and starting my own media. And that's the beautiful thing. Guys like you and me and Jan Irvin and Charlie Beach and Brett Vinat, we're all doing our own thing, and we're showing how it can be done, right? You can get relatively high production quality now for relatively cheap, which you couldn't even do 5 years ago. And you can get hosting online, and all the tools that are necessary to share this information effectively are all available in abundance like they've never been available before. And so people really need to take advantage. You know, even though we're going through this tough economic time, you know, you don't want to buy a bunch of crap, but instead of buying, like, you know, a coffee maker or an extra new car, get yourself, you know, a little bit of film equipment or an editing machine, and, you know, join in sharing your voice in a way that's more than just bullhorning a few people on the street or trying to reach out to a few friends. You can actually go on the internet and share your videos and your perspective and your viewpoint and engage in dialogue and discussion with people and lead it to something constructive. It's not about forcing your viewpoint on anyone else. It's about bringing your viewpoint to the table and letting everyone else see how it tastes and then getting their feedback.
Well, that's so right. I mean, cockroaches only breed in the dark, and we are shining the light of truth on that through the work that we're doing. And the work that we're doing is nothing special, and that's something that I always try to point out to my listeners, is that what I'm doing is absolutely nothing special. I'm just a regular guy. I have no training or background in this, and I'm just doing what I can with what I have. And I think that's all anyone can ask of anyone else, right? And that's why we're in it. We're just trying to get the word out in any way we can. And from what I understand, you don't have a film background either, do you?
No, we truly carry the independent spirit, I guess you could say, because I've always been interested in film. I definitely got into documentaries because I wanted to make films, even narrative films. I've written several narrative scripts, but just never got them produced. And, you know, in terms of getting knowledge together, I didn't realize I kind of had an inherent system or methodology of being able to teach myself. And like you, you know, I got an editing machine, got some software, taught myself how to use it, you know, managed to get some crappy film equipment and start shooting stuff. And you learn through that experience, right? And you make some of the mistakes, you read about some of the mistakes so you don't have to make them, and your quality gets better and better the more you practice, right? A lot of people, they just don't want to put the time into practice. They just want it to, like, everything be the best right away, and it's not a realistic approach, right? The convenience of modern society has kind of not just dumbed us down, but made us a little lazy in terms of our sense of entitlement and expectation for, you know, once I embark on something, I want it to be fixed and to work and be exactly how it is right now. And you know, the process, the creative process is a little different, but it's accessible to everyone at this point. You know, you can get a computer or a little laptop with a webcam, and you can record what you have to say, what your viewpoint is. And for people who are afraid of putting their viewpoint out there, like there's going to be some kind of backlash, there's already hundreds of thousands of people putting their viewpoint out there that is completely contrarian or counterculture, and we're not being rounded up, we're not being put on a list. Well, I can't say that for certain, we might be put on the list, but there's not enough manpower on the end of the so-called bad guys to effectively subdue all the voices of everyone. And the more people who are speaking up, the more we're encouraging people, it becomes this critical mass. So, you know, tell your neighbor, share your viewpoint, but do it in a respectful way that gets your point across in an effective and clear manner, but isn't telling them, like, believe this or you're an idiot. It's like, hey, have you heard this fact? It kind of makes you think about these other sets of facts that we thought we knew about, and then build it from there, right? And if a person's not ready to listen to what you're saying and they slide into an emotional reaction, then totally respect them for it. Be like, hey, I appreciate where you're coming from. You know, maybe give them some time to think about it, and they might come back to you and be like, hey, you know that thing you said, you got anything to back that up? And you can be like, here's some DVDs for you to watch.
That's right. Right. So exactly. So the point is to give people the facts which will enable them to come to this realization for themselves, rather than to use a logical fallacy like believe this or you're an idiot. So I guess that brings us to the topic of critical thinking. And so how has the critical thinking and the discovery of the trivium helped you in your work?
Oh, that's a huge one. Really got to thank Gene O'Denning, who first reached out to Jan Irving and his Gnostic Media podcast. You know, understanding, being able to label a methodology of critical thinking like the trivium and discover that it's not just something that, you know, people have evolved into. It's an ordered methodology that's been around for thousands of years. Learning that in the last, you know, 6 months to a year has completely changed the way that I take in information, especially researching. And, you know, its discovery, for me at least, really revolutionized what I was going to do with these Believers Beware films, because I was planning to just put out one film that kind of touched on health and food and spirituality and quantum physics and all that. And upon learning the trivium and talking a lot with Richard Grove and Jan Irvin and friends of mine here in Vancouver, I realized, like, this is the key. This, the trivium and quadrivium, this set of critical thinking tools that have been stripped out of our public education system, combined with understanding the logical fallacies and how they work in persuasive rhetoric, it gives you this set of skills, this intellectual self-defense. And so it dawned on me that instead of just like giving people all this other information, I should give them the foundation through the trivium and quadrivium to be able to understand not only what I'm saying in my films better, but everything subsequent to what they see after they've seen the film where they learn about the trivium and quadrivium. They'll be able to take that information in even more effectively and to sort it and to share it in a more effective manner, because they'll have these tools. And for people who aren't familiar with the trivium, it's just a three-step process of taking in data from your five senses. And it's the trivium's made up of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, better known as knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. So it's really just knowing about a thing, knowing how a thing works, and then being able to share that information through your wisdom, through rhetoric, communication. And it seems like a simple process, but what it does is it forces you to verify what you think you know and what you think you understand by applying critical viewpoints, other viewpoints to what you think you know and understand. And so it helps answer the four of the W's, you know, the who, what, where, when, and then it helps you find out why and how something happened. And without that understanding, you're going to read a newspaper article from, say, Sorcha Fall and believe every word, instead of realizing that it's just disinformation that's completely non-sourced and nonsense. And instead of sharing that fear-mongering report with a bunch of your friends on the internet, who then share it with their friends, and causing this big fear ripple, you can nip it at the bud and be like, hey, thanks for sending, but that's this is disinformation. Here's how I know it. And please don't send me anything else that's not verified by yourself. And that way we start sharing legitimate, truthful things instead of, you know, there's a lot of fearful conspiracy theory stuff out there. And it's out there on purpose to make all the real conspiracy fact look like fiction.
I think it's pronounced Sorsha Fail, but I hope people don't fall for that, and I don't think many people are, and I think certainly critical thinking is definitely one of the most important things that we can bring to the table here in terms of sorting through that type of disinformation. So certainly that's a key part of the whole process. And switching tracks a little bit, I understand that you're part of an organization called Think Free. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what you guys do over there?
Sure. I've worked with Think Free since 2005. It was started by two gentlemen I know, Robert Scott of the Christie family and Robert Arthur of the Menard family, who's very famous for his World Freeman Society and many videos that he's put out on the internet. I still work with Robert Christie quite a lot. He's actually featured in the Believers Beware series and has taken on a producer role there. And working on several other things, like a website called Pharmaceed, which is like natural health products. And we keep in touch, but Think Free is primarily devoted, or has been devoted, to getting people to analyze law, acts, and statutes, to understand their rights, to think outside the box in terms of all these authority structures. And the first film I did with them was called Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception, which was, its point was to teach you about this concept of the legal person and to get a distinguishment between yourself, the human being, and this corporate identity called a legal person. And to let the cat out of the bag as to how this whole concept of a birth certificate and registering your child and what the actual legal ramifications of that action is, getting that information out there so that people understand that a lot of the problems we're facing are self-inflicted by us ignorantly consenting to or ignorantly signing documents that we really have no understanding of. We don't know what they're really doing with these documents. So, you know, one of the first things that I try and get across to people is the definition of three words: application, submission, and registration. Because most people, they know maybe one or two of those words, but they don't know the meanings of all three. And application, or to apply, means to beg. So anytime you're applying on an application, you're begging for something. Submission, most people will know about, just means to bend to another's will, to submit. And registration, which is the real sneaky one, is to sign over to the state or to sign over to the royal authority, which is the core word regis. So registration. So anytime you register your house, your car, any of your property, your children, you're signing it over to the state, who's giving you what's called equitable title. So you have limited control over that object or person, right, your child. And people wonder why, you know, child services can come in or the state can come in and get you for property taxes or income taxes. It's because we've unknowingly been signed into and signed over to this system that treats us as if we're already dead. It treats us as two-dimensional corporations, and of course has no feelings, has no, you know, sympathy or compassion. And so the police state apparatus, to me, is the manifestation of this two-dimensional reality, when we have the potential to become not fourth or fifth dimensional, but beyond our regular third-dimensional consciousness. We have this ability to see through what's going on and become more consciously aware. And you know, you could say that there's kind of an awakening or a critical mass that's going on, and that in order to stop it, the powers that be are trying to, you know, make us forget who we really are, dumb us down, give us all this useless, trivial information, and then, yeah, make us think that we're, you know, dead husks or two-dimensional corporations.
That's right. I think one of the most important tactics that they try to use against us is to always keep us divided, to keep us feeling like we're alone, and to keep us feeling like we have no say over anything that's going on, and we just have to go along with the system to get along. But that's, of course, all complete lies. And once people wake up to that fact, they can start to discover just how far that we've been taken along this path by the technique of the Fabians in terms of an incremental increase in the type of control that government has over our lives. And all you have to do is go backwards in time, you know, 80 or 90 years before there were driver's licenses, or you had to register your vehicle or things like that. I mean, it's just such a daily part of our existence now that we don't even begin to question concepts like that. But what is it you're doing when you register your vehicle with the government? Well, as you point out, you're basically saying they own it and they're letting you use it. So things like that, when people start to understand concepts like that, I think they get a completely different understanding of what the currently accepted reality is. And I think that's so important. So I definitely applaud all the work that you're doing over there. And I hope people will check out Think Free and Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception. Again, I think that was a great film, and it really helped me to understand some of these concepts. So let's move to the present. What kinds of things are you working on now?
Well, yeah, to finalize with Think Free, essentially the direction we're going to go, I think, instead of trying to give people remedy through actual legal process, we're going to teach them about their rights, and we're going to develop Think Free into a site kind of like triviumeducation.com and make it more about thinking critically, thinking free, and combining the concepts of critical thinking that I've learned and my friends have learned over the last several months, and combining those with the legal knowledge that we have, so we can turn out a class of people that are not lawyers but law warriors. The other stuff I've been working on, doing some stuff with Richard Grove and Jan Irvin. It's been really prolific. We've got tragedyandhope.com. We've got the Tragedy and Hope community, which I invite all your listeners to check out. I'm going to make sure that there's a link available for a mass invite. If anybody wants to check out the Tragedy and Hope community, there should be an invite link wherever you find this interview, hopefully. Also working on a new web show with Rich and a few other people called What You've Been Missing. And we're supposed to be getting a guest star from Charlie Veach of the Love Police in our upcoming episode. And also, yeah, Believers Beware, that series is coming to fruition. We've got the first film, Contrary Conditioning. It's more of a series of episodes, I guess. And that's on the Trivium and the Lost Tools of Learning and the public education system. That series will be followed by Consumption Control, which will finally be released. That's about the health system, big pharma, food, and understanding, you know, how labels and all that stuff are used to trick you into eating poison, essentially. And then the final series for Believers Beware is going to be called Conquest versus Consciousness, and that's going to be talk about like the Zeitgeist movement, we talk about religion, all the real heady taboo stuff, but in a way that you might not have thought about, and that's completely non-confrontational. More, you know, getting people to use critical thinking to wake up, and like you said, see past the divisions. Because I think the number one thing people need to realize when they're thinking in terms of all these divisions like race and nationality and sex and everything is that the most racist, sexist, prejudiced entity on the earth is the government. Because it is the one that primarily separates us based on all our physical attributes, not us. When we're a little kid and you see other kids, you see kids. When you're an adult and you haven't been programmed with all these isms, you usually see another human being first, and then your prejudices might come and take over. So if people realize that they have to stop following these ideologies that the government promotes and instead seek out their own philosophy, you know, figure out something that makes sense and has proper principles and an understanding that's logical and reasonable and based on, you know, unfortunately, if you're emotional, you need something based on your intellect. And if you're too intellectual, you maybe need a little bit more intuition. But the point is that you can find this balance, find this information, and share it in an effective way. And that's what we're doing. All the projects that I'm working on, I'm working with Richard Grove, Jan Irvin, yourself, James, Rob Christie. It's all geared towards not only empowering people, but we don't want to tell them what to think. We want to show them a process of how to think so that they can take what we teach them and go off on their own and go in any direction they want. But as long as it's something that's useful to them and raises their consciousness. And as long as we're sharing these ideas like that, then it's only a matter of time before everyone's woken up and said, I'm not going to give my time or my energy or my power away to this state, which is using my energy against me like I'm a battery.
Right, exactly. Well, who can really dispute that? I mean, what's the downside of doing that and learning a process of coming to an understanding of a subject? I mean, what is the downside? There is none. So it's such an important process, and I think people really have to take it to heart. So I applaud all the work that you're doing, and you seem to be extremely prolific. Do you have any time to sleep, or you just stay awake 24 hours a day?
Yeah, I sleep about as much as you do, I guess. No, I try and work efficiently. I definitely, you know, time management has its issues. Like, you know, 2020 hindsight, for example, you know, Rich really did a lot of the editing on that one, and I just did a lot of the filming and a little bit of voiceover, but he was nice enough to give me a director's credit, and, you know, maybe I'm more of a producer, but, you know, that was a film where it was like a shared project. So what I'm trying to do now to, you know, you kind of appear more prolific, I guess, when you're associated with many projects and you are contributing, but that's, I think, what the new model will be is as independent media creators, you know, you get into a schedule, but like you're doing with James Evan Pilato and The New World Next Week, we see the benefit in working together and kind of sharing the load, and then you, not only do you cross-pollinate the audiences, but you get multiple viewpoints across in one batch of media. And I think that encourages other people to do the same. So I'm hoping people follow our example in how we're producing, you know, non-fearful, empowering, self-learned media where people can not only consume it, share it with their friends, but see how we're doing it. Like, I think, you know, showing people behind the scenes how to do a green screen, how to do a composite, what kind of mics they want to use, how to get a good, decent camera for not that much money. Show them these techniques so that they don't have to walk in with the unknown and fearful of what they don't know. They can at least go, hey, these guys are doing it already. I'd like to get my viewpoint out. It's a little different. I'm gonna emulate their, you know, deal. And, you know, we might just work with those people as they come to become better at what they're doing, because that's what we're looking to do, is expand our consciousness and expand to not just like minds, but to people who don't think the same way, but want to learn. And that's it. It's just the curiosity. That's all I look for now when I'm trying to share information, is someone who's actually curious about what I have to say.
Right, and we've been conditioned in so many ways to reject information before we ever hear it, so it is important to have that curiosity. And I can't stress how important it is that people do try to get involved in this. I mean, it's quite a ways to go from leaving comments on YouTube to making YouTube videos, but once you make that leap, leaving comments on YouTube doesn't seem like such an important task anymore, and you find better ways to use your time. So definitely, I think it's important that people start to get involved in this and add their voice to the mix. I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. I'd just prefer that you add your voice to that conversation. And absolutely, anyone who's teaching others how to get involved with this, I applaud that. So. Just so much exciting work that you're involved with, and it's exciting to be involved with Tragedy and Hope and What You've Been Missing and all of this exciting new media that's coming out. So, Paul Verge, I guess we can direct people to divergentfilms.com and thinkfree.ca. Are there any other websites you'd like to get people to check out?
Yeah, if they want to see Hijacking Humanity, you were kind enough to post the audio, they can check out the video for free, actually, at hijackinghumanity.com. You know, thinkfree.ca I'm pretty sure it has Bursting Bubbles and several other films there. Divergent Films has most of my work. My YouTube page, which I think you can find, it's youtube.com/Huska Varna.
Maybe you should spell that for people.
Huskavarna. Huska Varna. Kind of like the chainsaw, but a little different. And, pharmacy, if people are interested in trying some hemp-based and some tasty natural health products, not to, because you are what you eat, and the better you eat, the better you think. That's the way I see it. But I think I would just leave people with the thought that as long as you're not apathetic, as long as you're doing something constructive for your life, you're already not letting them win. You know, by turning off your TV, canceling your cable, shopping for healthy food as opposed to, you know, boxed, you know, food with MSG and crap, you know, taking those small steps towards your own betterment and towards realizing your own power and not contributing your energy to this systemic kind of parasite, it's not as hard as you think. You just got to take that first step. You'll realize it's manageable, and you'll realize you have way more power than you think. Way more.
Such a valuable message, and again, I just want to applaud you for all the work you're doing, and I definitely want to encourage people to support your work. If you appreciate the films that Paul Verge is making, please buy copies of them, because without supporting this alternative media, the alternative media can't begin to thrive, and it's such an important thing for people to support people like yourself. So Paul Verge, once again, hats off, and thank you so much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you, James, and I appreciate it very much.